Come on. Welcome to Money Savage, Savage Approach to Personal Finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, the strong and powerful Ryan Curlin. Ryan, are you ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Excellent. Let's do this. Ryan started his career at the New York Stock Exchange in their ETF group and has been working in the ETF industry ever since. During his time there, he was part of the team that listed over 600 ETFs, which still make up 25% of the market. Today, he's the head of capital markets for Alpha Architect, LLC. I'm excited to have you on. Ryan, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Yeah, I started at the New York Stock Exchange in the ETF group, as you said. My background has been ETFs my entire career, and I row. It's kind of a hobby, more of a hobby and workout for now. But at my peak, I did row for the U.S. national team.
Awesome.
So that was a fortunate experience to have. Why do I do what I do? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's difficult to find meaning. I think working in finance, it's not like being a nurse or a doctor where you're quite literally saving someone's life, or being a teacher where you're working to make your students more knowledgeable. But there is kind of this battle raging right now in finance. I don't quite want to paint it as much as like good versus evil. I don't think anybody intentionally means to be evil, but there is this trend into ETFs and into getting investors to pay a fair price for the value that they're being delivered by fund managers. From 2005 to 2017, U.S. investors have saved an aggregated $266 billion purely from decreasing fund expense ratios. And that's just a phenomenal amount of money. And that's mainly driven by the ETF industry.
It's crazy.
The lower cost that ETFs have brought. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's kind of the side I'm on and fighting for. So I think that's a pretty great thing.
Yeah, well, I appreciate and respect that, certainly. I think one of the drivers behind launching this podcast was helping people to better understand overall personal finance, but certainly investing, and then really understanding how much your investments cost and how to figure out how much your investments cost, because all too often it's just too expensive. And if you're paying for something and you're getting a lot of return, well, then that's a worthwhile value. But that's not necessarily always been the case with a lot of mutual funds. So I think we're reading from the same script there.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, you know, and that's really what it is. It's just a matter of fairness. And that's kind of where the trend is headed. But what's driven that trend? How have investors been able to get more of a fair value? You know, the firm I work for, we're not like in the low cost game. So, you know, we're not certainly going to totally debate the low cost thing, but the point is just fairness. And what's driven that is the internet. So the internet has been this incredibly powerful thing to spread knowledge for investors. And again, the ETF industry has grown up with the internet. So the first ETF was launched in 1993, about the time when the internet really started to take hold. I'll give you an easy example of how the two connect. Well, I met with a major registered investment advisor in St. Louis one time, and they were telling me, they're like, yeah, my largest client, so an individual investor, walked into their office one day and said, put down 10, like a portfolio of 10 low cost market cap weighted ETFs compared to what that financial advisor had them invested in for the last 10 years. And the ETF portfolio smashed in terms of performance what the advisor had them invested in for the last 10 years. And the powerful thing, you know, we can get into kind of maybe why that portfolio outperforms, some of the advantages ETFs have structurally. But the really powerful thing of that story is just simply that investor could do that, that they could compile a portfolio of 10 different funds and reasonably compare that performance to what they had been invested in. You couldn't do that in 1990, you know, and then fast forward to 2015 and Yahoo Finance and Google Finance and Morningstar and, you know, whatever, all these free or paid for tools, but that an individual investor can use that are just so powerful to give them transparency.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point that it used to be clear as mud to try to figure out exactly how everything was working and where your fees and your costs were. Yeah. So it's really changed quite a bit.
Exactly.
Well, I'd love to get a breakdown of what it is about ETFs that are so valuable, and you'll probably highlight the differences between ETFs and mutual funds in that process.
So there's a whole host of reasons. You know, the ETF industry has just been booming in terms of number of assets going into it. The mutual fund industry is about $17 trillion, the last I checked, in assets in the U.S. The ETF industry is about $3 trillion in total in assets in the ETF in the U.S. But for comparison, like 2 years ago, the ETF industry was $1.5 trillion, and the mutual fund industry was $17 trillion, aka the same, and ETFs have basically doubled in the amount of assets, right?
Wow.
Like I said, a couple of reasons. One of them is transparency, which I just kind of walked through, but ETF issuers will do things. They publish their holdings on a daily basis, so you know exactly every day when you wake up what you own in your fund, right? So kind of removing that black box. ETF issuers, the ETF industry just has a culture of transparency, right? By publishing your daily holdings, but also things like so many ETF issuers provide free tools that investors can go onto you can go to iShares website, you can go to Vanguard's website, you can go to WisdomTree, all these different issuers' websites, and you can access these free tools that enable you to analyze the investments you own, and that's powerful, right? That's free. But then the biggest driver, let me go with one other pretty powerful too before I get to the biggest, but pretty powerful too is also access. So things like you can now access simply easily these more, I don't want to say complicated, but just more esoteric things, such as gold. ETF, due to ETFs, you can now very simply, easily invest in gold by buying the GLD ETF or there's a host of others. Think about before, you know, if you wanted to invest in gold, you know, you could buy a gold bar or buy gold coins and have them in your house, but that's pretty, you know, where do you store them? How do you keep them safe? With ETFs, it's much easier to hold. And interesting story on that. So then, but what happens if you're what we call a gold bug? There in 19, I want to say, let's see, 1933, there was an executive order by Franklin Delano Roosevelt that confiscated gold from individuals in the U.S. They actually released an executive order. You had to turn in your gold. Otherwise, you could get up to $10,000 fine, which was a lot of money back then, or 5 to 10 years imprisonment. So there's like this niche community within the U.S. that doesn't even trust owning gold within the U.S. because the government could potentially expand it. So what did the ETF industry do? There are now ETFs that own gold for you. You actually own physical gold by investing in the ETFs, but they hold the gold in Singapore or in London or somewhere else. Like, if you don't trust that. So that's like how finally you can dice your views using ETFs, which is just interesting. But the last one, the last and kind of biggest one that's really driving it is the tax efficiency. So yeah, ETFs are basically create this tax deferral much more efficiently than mutual fund would, so that you can hold on to more of the gains that you earn through the returns of ETFs compared to a comparable mutual fund.
Well, got it. Well, that's certainly a powerful thing.
Yeah.
How does it? in terms of actually figuring out what your after tax return is, if I'm holding these things in a taxable account, how does that work?
Yeah, so, because if you don't have taxable money, right? If you're invested in an IRA or a 401k, whatever returns you see are you know exactly what you're getting if you looked at like the 5-year previous return history or whatever, and that's all well and good. So, but if you're investing taxable money, if you have money just in a brokerage account or wherever it may be, you only care about your after tax returns, right? So it's great if you can if you could have 10% returns, right? And that's just what it was. But if it was 10% returns and you got 3% of it taxed, well, you actually only got a 7% return. So, to figure out your after tax return, it's your gross fee, right? Gross of fee return. So that just means taking nothing into account minus fees minus income tax on dividends and capital gains tax minus your capital gains tax after liquidation. So that last one minus capital gains tax after liquidation, that just means, if you buy an ETF or a mutual fund for $10 and you sell it 10 years later for $40, you're taxed on that between that spread, right, from $10 to $40. But then the other part, right, where ETFs can help when you're figuring out your total return. So your total return, again, it's gross of fee, so management fee, minus your income tax on dividends and capital gains tax. So nothing can get around the dividends, right? So when an ETF or a mutual fund pays out dividends, that you're going to get you have to pay a tax on that, because it's income coming out to you. So everybody has to do that. Mutual funds, ETFs, you have to pay out of it. But ETFs are much more efficient at managing that middle part, the capital gains tax. So often, if you own, this is the most powerful in high turnover equity strategies. But if you're a fund and you have a high turnover of the equity, meaning you're constantly, you're buying Microsoft, and now, in the next quarter you decide Microsoft's no good, and now you want to buy Amazon. That would trigger within the fund a capital gains distribution if Microsoft went up, right? So Microsoft goes up, the fund sells it. They now have to distribute those capital gains to the underlying fund holders, right? ETFs are able to often get around that due to what we call the creation redemption mechanism. How does that work? Just generally, and just going to kind of simplify it a little bit real quick, but basically, so if you were like, oh, I want to sell $50,000 or 50,000 shares, which is about $1.5 million of the ETF, let's just say, well, what would happen? There's this thing we call an authorized participant. Authorized participant would receive those 50,000 shares. They would deliver those shares to us, the fund. And then the fund, instead of us having to sell the stocks like you would in a mutual fund, right? Instead of us having to sell the proper amount of stocks, we would actually just simply deliver out the stocks. We wouldn't sell them to the authorized participant, which is a trading firm. And that authorized participant would then liquidate those stocks. Now, the power of it is because we didn't sell and we just simply in exchange we received shares of our ETF in exchange for those stocks. In the tax code, we call that an in-kind transaction. That's like something you could look up. It's in the tax code. But so that's so powerful because now, even though the individual investor decided to sell, the other people who are continuing to own that fund aren't affected by you deciding to sell. Whereas in a mutual fund structure, they would be affected because we had to sell stock because you wanted to sell. So that's the powerful thing. So it's really all about tax deferral. You want to defer your gains as long as you can. And so by us not getting hit by those capital gains taxes, you, the individual investor, are enabled to defer your taxes much longer most of the time.
That is interesting. Is that the way that every ETF works, or is that firm by firm?
almost every ETF. Yeah. So this is just, you know, all good to go for the ETF structure in general. Yeah.
Got it. Now, you mentioned the pretty explosive growth of ETFs over the past 3 years, give or take, or a couple of years. How often before people see more ETFs showing up in their 401ks?
Yeah, that's always kind of been like the final frontier for ETFs, and they've been talking about that for, 10 years probably. And it seems like, you know, like I said, in the 401k, there's not as many advantages to having an ETF with non-taxable money as there is taxable. So that's like one hurdle just from an inertia kind of thing. But then, you know, the reason that's mainly pointed to is there's all these kind of legacy systems are set up to use, mutual funds for when they're providing clients with 401ks and things like that. So, there's kind of just like a technology legacy issue there, I think, that prevents ETFs from being in 401ks, or IRAs, things like that. And I'm sorry, you could have them in IRAs. But so how long it could be anything. Every year they say it's like 1 year away, we're going to solve it. So I don't know. I don't know. No good. I don't have a great answer actually for that. But yeah.
Well,
technology legacy.
None of us have a crystal ball. So
yeah.
Soon.
Yeah. We're working on building that. Yeah. The crystal ball.
Nice. Well, Ryan, Savage Nation is ready for your difference making tip. What do you have for them?
Yeah, the difference making tip, I would just say you know, every situation is different, but you should, if you have taxable money, you should definitely look at incorporating ETFs into that, especially if that taxable money is invested in stocks. You know, always do your own research, go talk to others who would take the other side of this, because that's the best thing you can do. You know, find somebody who has the other argument. But if somebody in finance can't explain something to you clearly, you got to keep looking.
I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
So Ryan, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you and your firm?
Yeah, you can go to alphaarchitect.com. So alpha, you know, like the finance term, and architect, like the, you know, home builder, alphaarchitect.com, or you can follow me at Ryan P. Kirlin. That's Ryan P. Kirlin on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Ryan your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to alphaarchitect.com and follow him on Twitter at Ryan P. Kirlin, and I will list both of those in the notes of the show. Thank you again, Ryan.
Thank you very much, George.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, because we are all in this together. What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on!